To slow the spread of the virus, we need to press pause again. That's why, once more, we need to stay home and avoid all non-essential travel. Gatherings are prohibited in red zones and are to be avoided in orange zones. And it's important to keep following the everyday health measures. Let's press pause again to curb the spread. Learn more at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Let's continue to protect ourselves properly. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
President of BSN, I do political science, and I guess we're just going to go around and introduce like one another. So, Atayo.
Hi, everyone. My name is Atayo. I am a U3 Honors History and International Development student, and I'm excited to be here with you all today.
Hi, everybody. My name is Issa Gonzalez-Peltier. I'm going into my third year at McGill, so U3 student and an econ major. And I am the vice president finance of the BSN.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tori. I am the outgoing president for BSN, and I'm going into my final year in economics within the Faculty of Arts.
Perfect. So basically today we're going to be talking about Black Lives Matter and everything that's been kind of happening recently, preceding like the death of George Floyd and media outlet and like controversy surrounding that. So we're just going to kind of talk about like a lot of different topics of things that we think that are important for Black people to hear and like know that there's a community that support them, and that there are people that are going through the same shit. Like, so we're just going to have an open, free dialogue about it. So I guess we'll start off by talking. I feel like one of the big things that like a lot of Black people have faced and like a big problem is just like kind of figuring out how to communicate with like white people about like this whole situation, like how to explain like the pain, like emotional turmoil that Black people are going through, have been going through, and like how do we convey this to people, like how it's so just, I don't know, such an intangible thing. Like, that's something that I personally struggle with a lot, is like just trying to explain to my friends. And like, I know that a lot of them do try to get involved and like to understand themselves, but yeah, that's just one problem that I face. I don't know if any of you guys feel the same way.
Definitely. I think that like figuring out how to talk to a lot of my white friends about race and like racism has been a huge pain point for my whole life. I've grown up in so many white spaces. So I think that like the microaggressions and the forms of like racism that I've faced over time have always been something that has been prevalent. But my ability to kind of like call it out and like handle a lot of situations has definitely evolved. And I think especially when I was younger, I had no idea kind of how to really tackle this. All I knew is that these instances made me feel really crappy and horrible. And I think it's been interesting recently as I've grown more and I've kind of understood and like been fortunate enough to figure out ways to kind of talk about and also just like, I guess, comprehend the racist acts that have been like targeted towards me and my friends and my family. Like it's kind of allowed me to better communicate in some ways how I need some of my friends to be acting, or just like be able to cut them off entirely. But even still, as I've been learning, it's still like a process that I'm getting better at. And I know that like myself and like other people like struggle with consistently. Yeah.
I remember that actually, I was talking to you about this the other day, Tori, about like, personally for me, I think for you too as well, like we went to like very private, like elitist kind of majority white schools. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of like, it's just been, and even like actually at McGill, this is like a huge thing, like a majority white university, like a majority white institution. I think it's been so interesting to see like how institutions deal with it, like how people who are like, you know, have some kind of authority over students and who are making like decisions at this high level are dealing with this like racist thing, like racism is not a new phenomenon, like we all know that, but it's kind of a new like trend in a way. And I don't know if like any of you guys have noticed that, but that's something that I've noticed a lot about my guild. Like all of a sudden now everybody's like super interested in Black Lives Matter. Like where was that same energy before it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think like a lot of these institutions, what's also interesting is like, I know growing up in Canada, like it was never taught, like slavery was never taught. Like you never learned about the history of Canada, but yet you were super confused about why like there were often spaces that were just so hostile to you, or you didn't necessarily understand why you didn't fit in, or you'd get like really like just ignorant or racist comments. And I think that it's been quite interesting having the ability to learn more, or just like I've definitely taken it on my own time to like learn more about like the history of like slavery in Canada and how like tightly linked it is to the history of McGill. And like even just in like learning about this, it's so, it's crazy how like much they've kind of buried all of this history and allowed for this institution to just keep going. And as you said, like now it's all of a sudden like, oh, like tackling anti-Black racism, but like we've seen so far that it's only really words. We'll see if it goes further, but like from how much that they've buried, I think like most Black students know that there's just an immense amount of work to do to kind of really unpack all that is there and all that needs to be kind of fixed in order for Black students to really feel completely welcome and have the access to the same opportunities as white students on this campus. So
I think also for me, particularly after like the death of George Floyd and the protests in Minnesota, I think like something like changed in me where I was kind of just done with like appeasing people and like being nice to people and like explaining to people nicely that racism exists. And I was like, at this point, like if you have all of these resources disposable to you and you still are unable to educate yourself about what racism is, how it exists and the forms that it presents, like you're just racist. Like you are enabling it and you're choosing to be negligent and oblivious and obtuse, really. And I don't have time to like coddle people on top of everything I already have to deal with. So I think the white people around me can probably attest to that, but like, this is super thin. And I think also, I guess maybe my experience is a little bit different because basically I manage a political journal on campus, the MJPS, although nothing I say of the entire organization, but I thought I would bring that perspective because I think it's interesting to see the discourse that's happening with political analysis. Mm-hmm. And I think in that space, it can be a little bit frustrating because it feels like they're 10 steps behind where the rest of the world is. And people are still, especially McGill students, poli-sci students specifically, like, I think we need to make it clear that there's no intellectual justification for racism. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and have a debate with you as to whether a Black man deserved to have, to be kneeled on for 8 minutes. Like, that's not going to happen. And it doesn't mean that like, I'm not open to debate. It just means that like, you're debating my right to humanity and that's not something I'm going to engage with, so.
What are the stakes for Black people in those kind of conversations? You know what I mean, like, what are the stakes? Like, for us, it's a lot more emotional, and it's like, this is like our reality. Like, for them, it's an intellectual conversation, and so they kind of approach it in a very detached way, like in a debate kind of way. And it's just like, it's that, if I don't find out the frustrating, because it's like, there's a certain power in being able to, you know, actually be like close to the things that you're arguing about, and like, to have like that kind of experience. But a lot of people just want to like always approach things with like this whole like you said, like intellectual, like what argumentative perspective, and that, yeah, I don't know, that's just like,
it doesn't work. And then also like there's certain things that just aren't debatable, you know. And I think it's wild that if you think that putting your knee on a man's neck is like something that can be debated, then like sometimes I just look at those people and I'm like, then like, what does that say about you, you know? Like, I think it's so crazy, but I completely agree. I have had so much less patience, and honestly have just given so much less shits about like what people like think when I like speak my mind. At this point, like, it feels like, obviously we know that these injustices have been happening for so long, but it's just so in our face right now. And especially for Black people, like, it's just even more in our face, almost to a point that can sometimes be like unhealthy and we need to log off, because the sharing of all these videos, like, we don't need to see it, like, we know. But just with all of this hype and like, what's the word, like all the protests and everything that's going on, I definitely think it's kind of led me to be like, honestly, what do I have to lose? Like, everything is out there. And I think any type of like, I guess, like any like part of me that was scared to kind of like call some of my friends out in certain ways that I might've had before is just so gone. Like, it's disappeared. It's not even existent. And I think maybe, though, I don't know about you guys, but it's kind of been a release in certain senses, because I didn't realize how much tension and frustration I had in certain relationships where unknowingly, like, I don't think I was doing it knowingly, I was letting certain instances or like ways that like people, comments that people made slide because I was like, oh, it's not worth it. And just like being able to like set better boundaries in relationships and being like, hey, like, unless you educate yourself on this and do better, like, I don't see our relationship going further because I just can't have this energy in my life. Like, being able to say that and set those boundaries has allowed for so much healing that I didn't realize that I needed, which I guess like is a weird silver lining that I'm grateful for in some senses, because I just feel like so much, I don't know, it was a healing that kind of has allowed me to redirect that energy that I used to take to like shield myself, to kind of one, heal, but then also put it towards like supporting other Black people or just like working on myself more, like, I don't know, just anything but like being upset. So I guess that has been positive, but it's crazy. It's really crazy.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Guys. As I'm sure most of you are aware, especially after the recent like J. Cole song, there's this notion that, well, in his song it was about Black women, but in general that Black people should take the time to educate others, especially when it's like juxtaposed to us being like quote unquote angry, or like having, like, people will describe us as like having a lot of hate and being just angry and like, you know, why is this your attitude? Why don't you take the time to educate us and, you know, make us understand you? And I wanted to know, like, I feel like I can anticipate you guys, your like initial response, but something, because for me, I'll answer the question like myself first. Like, to me, I think that's like bullshit. Like, why should I take the time as a Black person to educate you, or fully, like most of them are fully grown people? Then I'm like, while I do think that that's personally bullshit, at some point, do we have to sacrifice and just take that time and acknowledge that, okay, our previous like a way of action is not working, and maybe we do need to actually be more open and understanding and have more engaging conversations, as opposed to, you know what, if you're racist, like, fuck you. You know like that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I definitely feel like with racism there's like two things in my head that are going on. I feel like with the whole conversation about education, and it's not just about racist people, it's like educating the police, anti-discrimination training for the police, training teachers to be less racist. Like, you can't train a racist person to be less racist. There are people that are so racist that no matter how many conversations you show them, no matter how many times they watch The Help, like, nothing is going to change, right? And I think people use the conversation about education to detract complicity. And what I mean by that is racism is a system. And at the end of the day, it's upheld by systemic features. It's upheld by the routine discrimination against Black people that's ingrained into all of our systems, like medical, legal, like, you guys know this. So me educating one person and taking the time to talk to them isn't going to change anything. What is going to change something is making those political changes and making those economic changes and economic choices to really force people to put their money where their mouth is. And I feel like I'm sick and tired. Like, I would argue that the education route is what we've been doing. We've been trying to have speeches. We've been making art to show people, like, this is what racism looks like. Don't do this. We've been doing anti-discrimination training. And honestly, the only thing that's going to work is burning stuff down and letting people know that we're done playing around and you have to put an end to this now. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like it's less that the whole conversation about education focuses it on the individual and, like, I'm stop being mean to Black people. And that's not what this is about. Like, you need to stop killing us. Like, you know what I mean? Sorry.
Yeah. Right. No, girl, speak on it. I feel like a huge thing for me when it comes to, like, educating individuals is, like, first off, like, as Atayo said, like we've been educating for so long. So all they really have to do, it's wild. We have this thing called Google. You go on the internet, you look up resources, and you read. You take the time, you read, you listen to Black people, because it's out there. And it's been out there. And, like, people have been circulating resources for so long. So at this point, I don't want to have a discussion with a white person about something that's so simple that they can do a Google search for people that have done the work for so long, and have a discussion that's ultimately draining for me. What I want to have, if there were having discussions, is, like, again, to Atayo's point, like, how can we implement structures, new structures, that will really be able for every, like, where everyone will be able to succeed? How can we ensure that we're allowing for, like, a society that is, like, giving Indigenous people their land, their rights, giving Black people, like, the ability to actually succeed without being, like, two steps behind all the time? Like, I want to have those types of discussions, which are actually allowing for real reforms and changes. And if people are coming to me with the most basic questions, then that's just, to, again, offensive, and you're asking for the labor of Black people, and predominantly Black women or Black queer women, which are always at the forefront doing this work. And so I just think that, like, again, that's just another act of ignorance on their part. And it's them using their privilege to, like, use and, like, take advantage of Black individuals' time rather than just doing their freaking homework and then coming to the table educated and ready to have real discussions.
I think also J. Cole's point wasn't, like, he was saying that No Name, or allegedly, I don't know who he was talking about, but he was saying that, yeah, you educate, but I don't like the way that you're doing it. Like, you have to say it to me like a child. Like, you can't scream at me or, like, whatever. He was basically saying that he needs to be coddled and needs to be spoken to like a child to understand the racism that is the misogyny that Black women face. And that's not a thing. Like, I can't coddle you into understanding racism. And I think at this moment in time, like, on social media, with the whole thing about Black Lives Matter, there's a lot of, like, talk about kindness and, like, being nice to people. When you're racist to me, you're not nice to me. Racism is not nice to me. It doesn't make me feel good. It's not kind to me either. So asking me to then educate you about it in a way that makes you feel good. Like, the bottom line is that you still don't feel culpable. You still feel good. I'm letting you know about racism in a way that makes you feel comfortable. And if you want to do the work about with anti-racism, it's uncomfortable because it's addressing a system that has given you comfort for so long. And until you're prepared to do that, I don't want to hear anything about being in solidarity with me, because you're not. You just want to feel good about yourself, and I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give you my ear for your white guilt. It's not going to happen.
I feel like also, like, what a lot of people don't really understand when they ask, like, Black people, Black women, Black LGBTQ people to, like, explain their experiences, is that this is a constant, like, perpetuation of trauma for us. So it's not just, like, a conversation. It's actually, like, traumatic. Like, it's, like, revisiting constantly the same detrimental conversation with, like, every single person. I've been talking to white, like, adults about why Black people shouldn't be shot by police. Like, and I'm like, it's crazy to me. I feel like, and I kind of get irritated sometimes, and I've been, like, actually called out on this before for getting annoyed of, like, having to explain to people why, like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Like, I don't want to, like, spend my time. And, like, people approach you, which is, like, without asking, they'll be like, okay, yeah, but can you, like, but yeah, but why should this happen? I'm like, why should I have to explain it to you, fam? Like, just read a book. Literally, just read a book. Just, like, no, reading a book is too hard. Go on Google. Like you said, like, there is nothing difficult about just, researching it. Why should I have to just keep on, like, you know, just being put back into this traumatic experience like over and over again. And this kind of perpetuates also the culture of like burnout for Black people, especially for like, I know like for all of us like in BSN, we're like leading like organizations, being like, you know, editors of like newspapers, whatever. Like for Black people, like we already have everything that every other white person and like non-minority has. Like we already have that. And then now we also have to deal with racism and systematic discrimination. And now we also have to deal with the fact that like you don't get it, so we have to explain it to you. Like it's just too much. Like this is the reason why so many Black people are just constantly like put down in society, is because of all of these burdens that we carry like on a daily. And yeah, I was gonna say about like the No Name thing, like I thought it was No Name that mm-hmm. he was addressing. I thought it was so sus. Did not rate J. Cole for that. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, J. Cole also just like needs to check his privilege in so many manners. Like check your light skin privilege, check your male privilege, and like the fact that at a time where Black women and are just being like murdered, like we needed you to use your platform in a really positive way, and you just did the exact opposite. And I think that was even more disheartening to see. Like, I don't know, I've never been a huge J. Cole fan, but I never looked at him negatively. And I think that it just hurt that like, he was just so ignorant in so many ways and like reinforced so many notions of what we know as Black women, of like Black men often not necessarily standing up and supporting Black women who are always doing so much labor for them. And then even the fact where he was like, oh, dumb it down, I don't like the way that like this woman is doing stuff, like, oh, coddle me. It's like, again, Black women have been coddling Black men in so many ways like this for so long. And I don't know, I think that part also just really bothered me. I think that like as Black women, and then even more so for Black queer women, like there's just that many more battles that are being fought. And it just kind of shows that like there's just, again, so much work to do. And I think that like, I just saw so many posts on Instagram and so many people like speaking out more about that, and how like as Black women, we just have that extra battle to fight. And it's hard. I don't know. It's hard to wrap your head around. I don't know how you guys feel, but I think that was another thing that like just really had me rattled, not rattled, but just, yeah, again, disheartened. But if anything, I think what's really cool is then at the same time seeing how badass so many Black women are and are killing it out there and doing amazing things. But also like reminds me how important it is to also have those healing spaces, because as Helena said, like we're doing so much work, like with the amount of Black people at McGill is so few, and yet so many of us hold ridiculous amounts of leadership positions because that standard of Black exceptionalism is just so high. And you have these Black students doing literally everything possible in every single area. And they're phenomenal, but again, burnout, and then providing room to heal and letting yourself breathe and sit down and just like be able to just live at certain moments. Like, I think it's been on my mind a lot, like providing myself and other Black women that I know that type of room to really just kind of like live, love, and breathe. So I think it'll be interesting moving forward how amid all of this important like justice work that we're doing, how we also make sure that we're also taking the time for ourselves to like breathe and live. And then like, I don't know, hopefully we get less J. Cole's and more people stepping up to kind of be better. We're seeing it, but like that momentum continuing in that area. So
yeah, I want to touch on like something that was kind of brought up, like the labor of Black people and asking Black people to labor for free, but more on terms of like I'm so shocked at the amount of groups that have reached out to the BSN to basically do their jobs for them. I realize that it's something that they must not even think about. Like, it's not something, I feel like it's maybe they really just don't understand that this is not something that you can ask for. Like, you cannot ask the BSN to draft like regulations for your company or your organization and how you should hire people. Like, that's not what we're here for, and that's what you are there for, and that is your role. And that also signifies that you're so lacking in Black voices within your own community that you have to outsource Black people. Like, it's just like incredible to think about. And if you saw the amount of people who reached out in that manner,
so
it's
wild.
Incredible. But I think what is important for us, like touching on what you said, Tori, about like in this time, like all the caring for ourselves, is setting those boundaries. Because when I'm reading those emails, I'm like, am I being too cynical? Is it like, should we really reach out to them and help them? Is it something that we should be doing? And I'm like, no. Like, this is really not our job. We're here to serve Black people, and to like promote like Black students and look out for Black students on campus. And that's really not what we're here for. And it's really shocking that that's what a lot of people on campus think that we should be doing.
I think what you're talking about embodies the role. Like, if you look at the average board of directors, they'll be like, we have one Black person. What is that Black person doing? They're director of equity and inclusion, director of diversity, like doing all the labor of making a company more inclusive and diverse. And I feel like one thing I've tried to stress in the organizations that I'm a part of is that if you want to release a statement and say that you're in solidarity with Black people, you have to make sure that you can actually be in solidarity. You can't be in solidarity with an issue that you perpetuate. So literally all you have to do is look around you. How many Black people have you hired this year? How many Black people are in leadership positions this year? What equity complaints have you had as an organization? And what have you, and which ones are discriminatory in nature? And what are you doing to change them? Is this a comfortable space with Black people? Like, there are so many things that you should be thinking about if you say that you're in solidarity with Black people, and that you should be conscious of in trying to change. And asking a Black person to do that work, like you said, Issa, is outsourcing it and taking, again, the culpability and the onus on you as a white person to address these issues. Because we can't help dismantle a system that you perpetuate and create. You have to do that work yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I remember the first few months when for this new year for BSN, I was so overwhelmed with those emails, like literally day in, day out. Like, I was like up from like 9 a.m. to like 2 a.m. the next morning, just like on my emails. Like, it was so much. Like, even actually the other day, somebody sent me an email being like, can you review our statement? I literally just copied and pasted like the automated email of that thing that we did about statements. Like, it's just a lot. Actually, but I wanted to add something to like Tori's point of about like the disparity between, you know, like inter-community, like between Black men and Black women, and like this whole kind of thing. Like, I think that for Black men, like, it's not like to undermine like their experience. They have a very like unique experience as like people, members of society. But I think that what's like kind of crazy is that it's just like, it kind of speaks to, you know, even within our own community, like people are not safe. And there's so much like discrimination like within the Black community. And even in terms of like maybe Black women aren't being like shot on the streets as much. And that isn't science. So like, I'm not like sure, but like, racism, I mean, this kind of like discrimination is kind of brought home. So Black men like go out, they suffer in the streets, they suffer in society, and as do Black women. But then like Black men bring home like all that like hatred and like, you know, like just anger from like the stuff that they've been through like throughout the day, like to Black women. That's why like it explains so much of like the dynamic and the relationship between like women and men in the Black community, and like why there's so much, even like even if you think about like Black women female rappers, and there's like so much like domestic, I want to say like domestic abuse, but like there's so much like stuff that happens in the Black nuclear household that is just like, I don't know, like I just wanted to like say like that is like something that does happen. So it's not, you know, like we speak about like Black solidarity, but there isn't even like what does that really mean if we're like talking, if we like think, take into account all of these other problems that like perpetuate our community.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, okay, going back a little bit, like I think in terms of the emails, that was just like, that always happens in Black History Month. And I think it was even more heightened with George Floyd, but like it's a reminder how important boundaries are, but then how entitled other people are and how easily they can ask for our time and our resources when already we were releasing statements, working on our website, transitioning to a new exec team, and dealing with the pain of the fact that black bodies are on display everywhere. So that is just wild to me. And I'm so happy that you guys created an email to just kind of send them on their way, because it's just ridiculous. But I think that to your other point, Helena, I think that all of this is just so complex. And even us as Black individuals, there's just, I know for me, I'll speak for myself. I think that it's been a huge time of reflection in every single way, time for healing, but then also time to reflect on my own experiences, on my own privilege, on my own, circumstances that have created who I am today, and working within these different organizations, how can I be of service to the Black community? But then when also do I need to step back in certain instances and provide other people with room to share their voice and share their experiences? There's just so much there. And I think that there's so many levels, but until the people within our community too, who also do hold privilege, do step back and also reflect, I think that the discussions won't necessarily be as fruitful as they need to be in order for us to really move forward in unity to be able to kind of affect the change that needs to happen. But definitely still reflecting on that too and trying to figure it out.
I think that that's really, really important. Self-reflection during this time, even for a Black person, just to sit down and reflect on the biases that you may have and how you, because the thing is, it is systemic and we are within the system. So even mm-hmm. though you're a Black, there are still ways that you yourself may be perpetuating that. And I think it's really, really important for everybody to just self-reflect. And so I think there's also a problem that I've noticed with people making it very individualistic, if that's how to explain it. As you guys have, I'm sure you've seen on Instagram, a lot of people have been posting a lot, trying to spread awareness. And I think that once they start doing that, they see themselves kind of in the focus of what's happening, and they're doing, all that they can, they're doing this good. So they absolve themselves from anything that they may be complicit in. And I think that's very problematic, because I have had experiences where I call out people and they have both been Black. They would post something that I don't agree with, that I think is in the way of the progress that we want, even though they do mean well. And the thing is, I think that people need to understand that when someone critiques you on something that's this big, they're not critiquing you as a person. This is a movement that involves all of us, and all of our voices need to be heard. And just because me and you don't agree on this one thing, I'm not attacking you, and it shouldn't be defensive. This should be a team effort, a team, we're all of us are working towards this better future for ourselves. And I think it's really important to people to keep in their minds that they shouldn't lash out if someone doesn't necessarily agree with how they think the movement or the revolution or whatever you want to call it should be going. I was kind of done, but just to reiterate, I've just personally had two experiences where I made a comment to two other Black people who both have their own privileges that I think that they should be aware of. But anyway, so I made, in my opinion, respectful critiques of things that they had posted publicly, and I was met with backlash, I was being mean and whatever. And I was this is something that we're all, all of my voices should be heard. Mm-hmm. I'm another Black person. This is something that I'm going through as well. If there's something that I disagree with, I think that you should be, if you're about it, how you claim to be posting, you're about it, we should be open to having an open dialogue, because this is something that will affect all of us. But I feel like people are making it about themselves. I'm doing this, I'm posting, I'm putting up petitions. So, I'm this activist. And then they don't stop to reflect on themselves and to reflect on how maybe they are perpetuating the same things that they're trying to fight against.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also if you're an activist, I think it's interesting to reflect on what being an activist means. I think a lot of times, especially when you have so few Black people in certain leadership positions or access to like certain like meetings and discussions, it often turns into the kind of, I am a representative of the community type conversation. And so you come in there and you're supposed to have all the answers. As Atayo said, like, you're the one diversity and inclusion person, so they look to you for everything. So naturally, you're just supposed to have answers to every single question. But I think there's an important aspect that, like, as Black people, especially those who are within many elitist institutions and often do, out of anyone, have the privilege of sitting at some of these tables, is, are you, like, as you're being a representative, are you just sharing your opinion, or are you just like, are you ensuring that the voices of the community that you are supposed to be like a member of are all being represented at this table? Someone worded it really well to me the other day, and it's slipping my mind, but I'll bring it up if I remember it. But I think it's just like how you frame yourself as a leader is, I think, really important, because sometimes, in these positions, we forget to listen and sit down and be like, oh, like, what are other people saying? And there is a point where then, as Iza said, we kind of are perpetuating these systems because, well, we're in privileged positions where it's benefiting us. We get our voices heard. We might get a decent salary. Like, we get a seat at the table. We get the relative, like, prestige. But again, we're often leaving the rest of our community behind and not necessarily making changes that, like, really benefits everyone within our communities as well. So I think that whole listening part and then having those discussions is so important. Like, how do we think that like policies and different things are made? Like, those are like things where like people are sitting down and having discussions, like passing back and forth ideas. I think it can be often very devastating when we view critiques as something that's wholly negative, when oftentimes I know some of my best learning and growing moments have been when people have called me out on my, like, sometimes on my bullshit, being like, girl, like, check yourself, like, you know, like, review, like, the way you're thinking. And it's allowed for me to really reflect on the ways that I, like, perceive the world. And at least if maybe I don't end up, like, agreeing entirely, at least I've taken the time to really reflect on what they're saying and understand where they're coming from, and at least have that perspective within like my like bigger brainstorm of ideas, so that when I do make a decision, it's coming from a very well-educated and well-versed view. So I definitely think that that's something that we do often struggle with, because it's not like, we do all face our challenges, right? So then we feel that pain, and sometimes that pain can be manifested in a way where it's like, well, now I'm going to tell you, you know? And like, I guess to an extent, rightfully so, like, we're angry, like we haven't been treated fairly, we face some terrible stuff. But at the same time, if we then turn into the people that we're trying to fight against in that way and not necessarily listen and work together in that way, I think it can often be detrimental in another sense. But yeah, definitely something to reflect on further, for sure.
I think that's also like kind of like a moment that, like, nobody's really exempt from this kind of introspective like time. Like, no, it's like, it's not just like for white people, it's like for like me, for example. Like, I have a very different experience to a lot of Black people, and like a lot of people even like in the Black and the girl community, like being like light skin, being like mixed race, whatever. Like, there's not, I just feel like people think that's like, oh yeah, it's like all against, it's like, I mean, it's everybody against racist for sure. But it's also like yourself against yourself. And I think that's the whole point, is like you need to have like, you need to feel conflict. Like, no matter, everybody has some position of privilege and something to another, but like you need to like be okay with being uncomfortable. And like that kind of like, is a key thing from, I mean, like just pertaining to what Iza was talking about, like, for me, I think just allowing yourself like not be, you know, so sure about everything, and like just having a moment to be like, okay, yeah, like this, I'm gonna check myself. Like, I've been checking myself, like research. I think also for like a lot of things I've been seeing on Instagram, because it's like the biggest troll of my life, but about mixed race people especially, has been just like, oh yeah, like, you know, mixed race people, you don't have to like I don't know, you don't have to like, you know, put yourself in a position where you're like choosing between like your white side and your black side. I'm like, you kind of do have to like notice the fact that you are very much more privileged than a lot of other black people, and like that you could perpetuate a system of discrimination. And just kind of like once you realize that stuff, like you research colorism the same way that you research racism. Research like, you know, like homophobia the same way you research racism. Like it's all important, it's all linked, and there's a kind of intersectionality between all these things that like people just want to always ignore. Like everybody wants to be always a victim. And that kind of like, it's just been, like, I don't know, annoying me recently. But yeah, I think that's just something that everybody has to realize, like just look within yourself, like be uncomfortable for a brief moment. And it will be fine, like I swear.
Yeah.
I really like the points that all of you, I think all of you pretty much touched on it, on like black leadership and black people in leadership positions, because I have a theory that like might ruffle some feathers, but like I think this is pretty true, but like those positions like director of equity, and when corporations like bring in one token black person to like form the entire corporation's equity strategy, and in general I've noticed in the McGill community, like positions for black people, or positions in general that black people occupy, positions of leadership, they're designed for like what I think I've called, I don't know if I invented this or if this is like a term that's already existed, but like the 1% of black people. And what I mean by that is people like me, like I didn't go to private school, but I went to a private program. And in this private program, like from a really young age, you know, you did applications, you were taught how to write a resume, how to make a good CV, how to do a good interview, how to get into these leadership positions, how to apply for scholarships, where these scholarships are. And if you look at the vast majority of black people that are applying for like black positions and black scholarships, they're not representative of like the majority of the black population. Black students at McGill are not necessarily representative of the black community in Montreal. And I mean this in terms of like poverty levels, in terms of class, in terms of background, in terms of access to education, in terms of access to healthcare, and a whole bunch of other things. So I'm really critical of, you know, those of us, I'm critical of myself and the space that I hold as a black leader, and making sure that, like you guys have said, like you check yourself and you think about the fact that of all the privileges that I've had in my life and all the things, you know, that I've experienced that have led and informed my decision-making, and making sure that the positions I'm in, the people around me know that I'm not representative of the entirety of the Black experience. I can really only speak for myself, maybe people like me, but I don't represent the entire Black experience. And when a Black person does call me out and check me and say like, look, I don't think you're right on this issue, it's important for me to realize that, yeah, I'm Black, but you know, I'm a whole bunch of other things that I'm not. And listen to them and take in what they're saying so that we can move forward, I think, as a movement in the most productive way possible. And I feel like in a lot of ways, to be honest, this whole thing of like having a director of equity and having one black person that can occupy a predominantly white space is kind of designed to create, I think, division within the black community and to allow white people to select the type of black people they put into those positions. Black people that will be palatable and will, you know, conform to their agenda and exclude black people who might not know how to write the perfect application or the application that's compatible enough to get you an interview for those types of positions. But those are just some of my observations. Obviously, this is no criticism to everyone in those positions, but I'm saying that I think it's something that we should consider as a Black community, especially as a lot of people talk about representation as a cure-all for systemic racism.
Yeah, that's something I was actually talking about with my friend the other day, and it's a really good point. Like, if someone were to put me as, like, diversity and inclusion head at, like, some, I don't know, say some fancy, like, BMO or something. I don't know. I'm thinking of random bank. I would not be representative of the Black community in so many ways, because I came from like a like relatively upper middle class family. I like went to McGill. I went to a pretty elitist institution. There's just so many ways that I don't. Oh, I know how to talk white. Like I know how to make myself very like presentable. I know how to joke in the right way that like my white boss will be like, ah, ha ha, Tori, whatever. And like, it's not like, you know, like they're not uncomfortable. So in so many ways, as you said, I'm like extremely palatable to like the white audience, or I know how to be when I need to. And even in those little ways, there are so many ways that other like Black individuals who didn't necessarily like have the same privileges that I would, if they were even to come into these spaces, they wouldn't necessarily know like when to take certain microaggressions, when to maybe stick up for yourself, when to talk to certain people, how to network the right way, how to write those resumes, because they just haven't had that like privilege of education of like making yourself fit a certain like image, right? And I think that it's really interesting that you brought up those positions too, because I've been reflecting on that a lot. Like, I think there's maybe right now where I'm at is like maybe there's multiple ways of going about it, because like, I don't know, right now when I look at a lot of the diversity and inclusion chairs, they're usually white women. And then I've often been in those meetings before where actually this is slight sidetrack, but I think it's relevant, where I was like sitting in this meeting and they went around and they were talking about the importance of diversity. And I swear to God, there was like no person of color even in that room. It was just like all white women sitting around there being like, this is so great. And I was like in the back, like an intern taking my notes, like, this is so whack. What are you guys saying? But like, you know, like, I don't know. I just think that those positions, again, as you said, are very designed for a specific type of person. So then like, what's the balance, right? Like if you get a Black person in those roles, then it is a huge part on us to make sure that then who are we recruiting to these spaces? Are we really making sure that like bringing in those people, they are representative of the entire Black community? Are we like working to like change the processes so that it's not just getting in the same types of people, but it's really kind of diversifying that and making it representative? But then again, as you said, like one diversity and inclusion officer can't do all of that alone. Like you also need representation from other aspects of the firm. So I don't know, I don't have a perfect answer, but you're totally right on in terms of that being something that's relevant to reflect on. And overall, I feel like it's just like in every single manner, like not just like within the inclusion sphere, but like in the HR sphere, in the what's relevant to banking, in the investment banking sphere, in the corporate bank, whatever, in every single aspect of that business, it needs to be diversified. Like you just need more voices. And I also, again, like I think it's wild to me how some people can think that like when you hit a certain age or like you went to university for 2 years or 3 years or whatever, like the listening and the learning ends, you know? Like in any stage of your life, at any point, like that listening and the learning is just like a continuous basis. Like there's always more to learn and there's always ways to improve yourself so that you can ensure that you're like being like a better leader or just a better person, honestly. So like I'm kind of going back to what Issa said earlier, but even when it comes to like improving these structures and like thinking about these different things, like I think like a huge part that I've been thinking about is like there's just always more to listen and learn and reflect on. And the more that I do that, the easier it is to kind of have more fruitful discussions and find better ways to kind of solve these issues, because like you have more knowledge and you have more to draw from. And also diversifying your circle too, whether it's in these spaces or even amongst us, like having these conversations kind of allows for, again, more perspectives and more interesting different ideas to rise to the table in order for us to, again, then as a community too, then go and fight like and figure out how to like solve these things too. So yeah, I feel like that's something that like in every aspect of this needs to be kept at the core, just like reading and learning and listening to each other and respecting each other. And like, even if we disagree, just like making sure that we all have the room to like speak our minds and kind of just like heal in that sense. No, it's definitely been on my heart a lot, but yeah.
So, okay, I have a question for you guys. Do you guys think that the momentum for Black Lives Matter is decreasing in any way, like kind of like subsequent to like the George Floyd, like just in kind of recent weeks? I don't know, like my Instagram feed has been getting kind of like back to normal, whatever that means. But yeah, so do you guys think that it's like the momentum is kind of decreasing for Black Lives Matter? Especially like obviously not that much for Black people, but more so for like others who have been trying to engage with the movement, and how do you think that we can keep the momentum going for it? It's a kind of loaded question, sorry.
Muted, sorry, I was muted. This is tough. I think that in terms of like ensuring that like this activism is sustainable though, I forget the other parts of the question if there were others, but in terms of the sustainability part, I think it does again connect back to the listening and learning. Like so many people will post and they'll learn one thing and they'll be like, ah, great, like this is important. Like what's a good example? Like prison abolition, I educated myself, cool, I'm gonna post this on Instagram. And then they donate to like one charity and then they're like, yeah. And then they like log off and then they go to the beach and they're like, ah, it's so warm, summer's awesome. They forget about everything else, you know? And I think that like something that has helped me recently is every single week for myself, I've like made a goal of like, okay, like we're gonna look up, or like Instagram's so helpful still. Like if you just like do the different hashtags, like I'll look up a different organization and then I'll read more about it. And then based on the topic, I'll like try and go further and find a few more articles that I think are interesting and then see if there's like another charity. And like, I'm a student, so I don't have a ton of money, but I can donate $10 every week to a different organization. That's not that hard. So I think it's just like finding ways for yourself that make sense. Like I love reading about different things and like I find like it's super invigorating to like learn different about different projects and things that people are doing. Maybe like reading isn't your favorite, but it's still important to learn. Maybe, I don't know, go on YouTube and find some cool videos or like go on Instagram and find different feeds. I've been seeing some really cool stuff. One of my friends actually started an Instagram page and she's going into civil engineering and she like is trying to do a page on like kind of like the intersectionality of like environmentalism and how that relates to climate justice and how that also ties into the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's been her own personal reflection of like tying what she loves doing with civil engineering to like important movements that are going on right now and like spreading awareness. So again, like it doesn't always have to be like three of us here are on BSN, but like if that's not something that like you love, or like reading articles and being all like social justice warriors, there are still ways to like connect it to your own life and just make sure that it's kind of something that's now ingrained in your practices, you know? Or like just like little things like supporting Black owned businesses. Like if you look at there's so many resources, again, you go online and you're like, oh, like I want to buy a new book, but like let me go to like a different book list that's a Toronto one, or like go to a Montreal one and like just support them like in little ways, like making sure that it's just something that's within your mind, I think also helps in terms of sustainable activism. Because again, it's not just about like posting things online, it's, as Atayo said, like it's about changing structures, it's about allowing for more economic prosperity in so many different ways. So that comes in so many different forms. So whatever your strengths are, your interests are, then play to them. If you love mentorship and you know that like you have like younger brothers or siblings and stuff that you just have so much knowledge to share with them, then like take time out of your day to sit down and like talk to them about like what they're aspiring to doing. Like, do you want to be an artist? Like, do you want to go to university, or do you want to do both? Or, I don't know. Right. Like there's just so many ways, I think, to contribute to this movement. And I think sometimes some people feel like it's limited to solely like posting things on Instagram or having to be like so overly the top and like more in your face. And like, I'm definitely someone that like likes to be at the front of crowds and likes to be within community and likes to do those things, but that's not everyone. And every single way that like you feel that you can like contribute is still like very beneficial and meaningful. So I guess it's just finding your lane and then committing to it in a sustainable way that I think is like super important.
I really like what you said about sustainability. And I think that's a really important conversation to have in a way that's feasible for people who are just like kind of getting involved and getting informed about social justice. Mm. I don't know if people are like following No Name's book club, speaking of which, but I don't know if it's this one or the last one, because I'm behind, but anyways, the book was Blood in My Eye by George Jackson, I think it is, or Johnson, I'm so sorry if I'm getting that wrong. Mm. Sorry, yeah, it's George Jackson. And he was talking about like different forms of violence and how violence is the main motivator or main push for any successful movement, especially a movement that wants to change the system rather than simply, like as Angela Davis said, run on the treadmill of reform. And how violence comes in multiple forms. It can be physical, it can be economic, it can be physical, economic, it can be social, and ways to kind of put maintain the pressure that we've placed on public officials, on police officers and police unions to change what's happening. I think like going forward, there's two ways that we can do this. Because of the George Floyd protests and the protests in Canada over the deaths of a lot of Indigenous and Black people at the hands of police very recently, a lot of city councilors have presented motions to either defund the police or school boards. I know the Peel School Board, which I'm a product of, recently, like the director of education had stepped down. There was a whole scandal because of things related to Black lives and the issues with Black students at the school. School boards are revisiting and re-voting on whether not to allow police officers to continue to be in schools and suspend students for ridiculous reasons and arm young Black girls as young as like 6 years old. So all of those conversations are happening right now at the local level, at the district level, at your school board, at your community. It doesn't even have to be a federal election. And I think putting the pressure on your political candidates, your local political candidates, to be like, what are you doing? What's your vote on this issue? Emailing them, reaching out to them as constituents is so, so, so important. And I think it goes beyond voting. It's putting pressure, it's organizing voting blocks and saying like, as young voters, as a community of young voters, we're not gonna support someone who is in favor of continuing a police budget that is 3-4 times the amount that we're paying teachers. And I think all of that is really important. And I think also with regards to like economic violence, I've really been thinking about like literally every single purchase I make now, I'm like, what corporation is this going to? Who can, like, is there a Black business that I can purchase from that does this exact thing much better? You know, and just being really smart and decisive about who we're funding. And that in a way also puts pressure on corporations to change their structures and to adopt some of the things that we've been talking about and protesting for. But yeah, I think it's important to be sustainable and like do the small things and the little things and the not so little things like educating yourself. But I also think there needs to be a level of discomfort. Like you need to be pushing yourself to make sure that like our foot stays on their necks. Like they know that we're not playing around and that this movement isn't ending. And with regards to your question about whether or not the movement is ending, I think the coverage of it has died down because maybe some of like the more violent elements of it have like not been so like common now. But definitely people are still in the streets. I see pictures, depending on who you follow on social media, people are still definitely in the streets. People are still definitely applying pressure. As like the latest I checked, people are still camped out of the Toronto sign on Nathan Phillips Square. Like we're still going. And we need to people to keep donating to bail funds and keep donating to funds to like get protesters, even if you can't protest yourself physically, to make sure that you are sacrificing something to create the change that we really need to see.
Absolutely. I don't think the movement's over either. I think if anything, like the big news sources like CNN or whatever are getting tired of covering the same thing. But I think it's really only just begun. I feel like we're in a really cool point in history. And I think that like there will be dips and waves along the way, but overall there's definitely some momentum moving upward. And I think that even in our year at McGill, like it is gonna be kind of weird because COVID too, and we're not gonna be on campus, but I think that's just gonna make us more creative. I'm very, very interested and excited to kind of see the ways in which activism kind of evolves and changes. And how, like, there's just, I think there's gonna be multiple ways that it manifests throughout this year. And I think that the lucky part about right now, maybe similar to like what has happened in the past in the 60s and 70s, but maybe even to a more extent, is that like, for the first time ever, even though it was nothing, like McGill still said in an email, like they actually said it in an email, anti-Black racism. And like, that shouldn't be that exciting, but like they said it and they're aware that it's there. Are they gonna act on it right away without us pushing for it? No, but people are aware that this is like a real issue. So I think that it's going to be interesting, especially among students too. We're definitely in a very, I mean, not fully, but like more aware environment, people who are ready to mobilize. So I think it should be interesting how this kind of plays out moving forward. I'm definitely excited to see where it goes. So cool.
We pledge resistance.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
Episode 21, Ulumi, December 22, 2020, Amma, Noctunga Sukitsi, Nipibumu Ulumi, Ohara Rakitsi, you would Taba Utero Majonit, Uparone, Merry Christmas, Gumajonit, Ilaminot, Tapona Amalo Inutito, Kuvas of Bitsutinit, Nilia Titsilanga, you would, hitting Utoxutinit. So Nana Twinarati. Hi, I'm Annie Pisuti. Today is December 22, 2020, and welcome to Nipibumu. Today, we take calls from listeners sharing Christmas wishes, messages to loved ones for the holidays, and share the holiday cheer. We also play Christmas music, so keep on listening.